Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Question for you. How did you learn to read? Do you remember? Do you remember the process? Do you remember when you were a kid, how you were taught to read? Probably, if you're like most of us of the age who would be listening, someone told you that the letter A makes an ah sound, or A in certain sources, but ah, you know, or F makes a f, and so on. And you would have, it was phonetic, and it was a systematic approach of teaching this equals this, therefore apply this to this, and right? That's how most of us learned, and it worked. Well, that's not always done these days, and I did not know anything about this. I don't have kids in elementary school right now, so this was all new to me. Modern educational theory says the three cueing method is superior. And what is the three cueing method? Well, we're going to get into that in a little second for you to understand. But in fact, let me bring in my guest. And rather than me even try to pretend to understand what this is, let me bring in Dr. Erin Panda. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Child and Youth Studies at Brock University. She's also a cognitive neuroscientist who studies the link between learning to read and changes in the brain. Dr. Erin Panda joins us now. Thank you for doing this today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Thanks so much for having me on.
When I heard about the three cueing method, this is a phrase that I have honestly, again, because I don't have kids in elementary school now, we're way past that. I had never heard about this. What is this?
Well, actually, I think the way that you phrased it, take a step backwards, and your question about how did you learn to read is a really good way to think about all of this. There's a big debate in education for the last 100 years or so about whether it should be taught in the way that it sounds like you learned, you know, hearing the sounds of language, or if it should be taught in a more whole language approach. So that was done for a lot of people who went to school in like the 80s and 90s. That was more like memorize the word and don't worry about the spelling. You'll get that. It's more important just to be exposed to lots of books and to promote a love of reading, which is really important. And then what happened was a balanced approach, which basically said, okay, we'll take a little bit of both and we'll leave it to the teacher to decide. And the three cueing method was what was and still is right now in the Ontario curriculum. And it's actually not what you'd learned at all. It's more, and actually science shows that it's not effective, even though that's the way a lot of kids are being taught to read. It's more about looking at the picture in the book, looking at the first letter of the word and trying to guess what the word says. So right now in a lot of classes in Ontario, the kids are not being explicitly taught what the sounds of language are, strategies for sounding out words. They're not learning those skills at all.
But, okay, so, and again, like, I don't pretend to be an educational expert, thank goodness, because I would think that the way we had learned it was fine, but this seems like kind of hit and miss, that there are going to be some kids that can get it and there are other kids that probably won't. It seems far less, far less structured, or as I said before, systematic. It seems just more out there.
Yeah, it's kind of haphazard. And actually, you're right. Like,
that's a good word.
Most kids will learn to read whatever you give them. They'll figure it out. But for some kids, about 10, so conservative estimates put dyslexia or reading disability at 10%. So if you think about a typical class with 30 kids, that means three kids are not just going to be able to pick it up on their own. And if they're not given explicit and systematic instruction, they're never going to pick it up on their own. They might get, if their parents can afford to take them to a psychologist, they might have an assessment done and get a diagnosis of dyslexia, but that costs families about $5,000. And they're given then accommodations in school, but they're not taught then how to read. And that's really tragic because we know that if they're given explicit instruction, almost all kids can learn to read.
But who is this newer idea? Again, it's not really all that new by the sounds of it, but who is this newer idea then supposed to benefit? If you've got kids with dyslexia and other reading disabilities, is this supposed to help them because now we're not so caught up on the order of the letters and you can guess the word? Or is it, I'm not sure who this is supposed to be benefiting.
So the approach that's being advocated right now is to go back to the phonics instruction and to do it in an explicit and systematic way. and it's not going to hurt anybody, and it's really going to help those 10% of kids that need to have things explicitly, need to have this explicitly taught to them. You can kind of think of this, it's called universal design for learning. You know, like in whenever you're in a public space and they have those buttons beside the door that if you push it, the door opens. So that's
right.
Really going to help somebody who has restrictions to their mobilities. It's going to also help people who maybe have their hands full or who don't want to touch the door or who maybe are pushing a stroller. And it's definitely not going to hurt the people who could also open the door. So by taking this more systematic approach to teaching literacy, explicitly teaching the sounds of language, explicitly teaching, you know, the parts of words, it's not going to hurt anybody, especially if, I mean, teachers, I have great respect for teachers of I think they play such an important role. And
sure.
So what's being advocated here is just having more support for them.
Right. And look, I'm not blaming teachers for this one. This is not their idea to do this. They're teaching what they're being told to teach.
That's right.
And what you're talking about, where we're now going to go back to phonics, is because of there's this report that came out, the Right to Read report, which is suggesting we start to look back at the original ideas more. Because if I got my numbers right here, it's about a quarter of people in EQAO are not at the provincial standards in reading, which is outrageous.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I think everybody's projecting that those numbers are going to be even lower now after the pandemic and the gaps in education. So those were from before the pandemic.
Okay, so you're a cognitive neuroscientist, and I was trying to think today of an example of like how I could put this. If you were teaching a course in neuroscience and we were studying the brain, you would not simply take an anatomical brain, a cadaver's brain, and point at it and say, figure it out. You would give me implicit instruction of where the parts of the brain are and what's there. Like you would never say, okay, the cerebellum and the cerebral cortex, and they're all in there, just figure it out. You would never do that because it doesn't make any sense. That's what it sounds like this approach to reading kind of is.
Yeah, the approach that has been in our schools now for a while has been sort of more of an inquiry-based approach to reading. If you give kids access to books and literature, that they'll pick it up on their own. And like I said, a lot of kids will, but not all.
How do we... Okay, so with it right now, and I love that we're now looking back to a system that clearly worked. And I always say this, I say this with math as well, that I always find it so interesting that we all want to do, or certain people want to do this new math, and yet they're presumably smart people making these decisions, and they came up and learned the old way, and it was good enough for them to get to be as smart as they are, and now they say, oh, but it's not really that good. I always find that odd, and same with reading. But how do we know with this older system, that the one we're in right now, the three Qs, how do we know if it's not working until we're almost too late and the child is now way behind?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the problem. We have a system right now, we call it the wait to fail method. And so we, you know, assume that kids will pick it up on their own. If they have troubles, we say, okay, well, let's wait and see if they can catch up. And we wait and wait and wait, and we wait until they're in grade four, and all of a sudden now their demands have shifted, so we're not teaching them to read anymore. We're expecting them to, you know, learn about science from reading, and that's often when kids get identified. And it's really tragic, because if instead we take an approach where right at the beginning in kindergarten, we have still through play, I think we've learned a lot since back in the 50s. We know that kids learn really well when they're playing and they're actively involved in their own learning. But give them the tools to play with and check their reading, screen it regularly in kindergarten. Teach teachers what they need to do so that they can identify which kids maybe need to work on which areas, and do that right from the beginning so that you can prevent a lifelong disability.
There is a piece that Dr. Pander wrote. It's in the Spec. The headline is Right to Read Report Offers a Great Opportunity. It's on thespec.com right now. As an advancer to what we've just been talking about, I would encourage people to go look it up and give it a read. It's what prompted this conversation. It's an excellent piece. Dr. Aaron Pander from Brock University, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And anybody who's interested in learning more, the Ontario branch of the International Dyslexia Association, they've got a really great website with lots of really great resources for parents and for teachers.
Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.